Everyone, welcome to Analyze Your Trade, episode number 107 for January 2nd, 2020. This is the first time research show of the year. We're having a special Thursday edition of Analyze Your Trade, and Jake Bernstein and Jim Kenny are here for this. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research. And over the last few days, about 50 people submitted up to 5 symbols each, and we put the list together that we're going to go through today. And we're recording this at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And as I said, today I have arranged for Jake Bernstein and Jim Kenny to be here, and Jim is moderating. So go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thank you very much, David, and Happy New Year to everybody out there. First day of trading has been really active and exciting, so I'm sure you guys are all ready to go for the new year 2020 and the new decade 2020. We've got Jake Bernstein here with us today. Jake is very well known in the industry to most people, has written many books, and has delivered many seminars and information educating people on a wide variety of ways to approach the market. But without further ado, I'm going to let Jake introduce himself and a little bit about the company that he's running now. Jake, a little background and what's happening down at your place.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you and David. Thank you very much for doing this. I want to wish everyone a great new year, better than ever. So what do? I trade. I teach people how to trade. I've written 45 books. I've been around for 50 years and beginning to sound like it. I trade short-term, long-term, intermediate-term. I trade stocks and futures. I'm not an options guy, although I realize the value of options and how they can really be very good for someone who wants to minimize and define risk. So my trading is purely technical. I'm a numbers guy. I don't look at fundamentals at all. And that's really it about me.
All right. And at the end of the broadcast, everybody, Jake will explain how you can get a hold of him and get more information on how he's approaching the markets nowadays. We've got a great list from the standpoint of diversity. You got a lot of big names here and a lot of different industry groups. And so I'd really like to try to get through as many as possible. Jake is a technical-oriented trader and has been for decades. So I'll throw in a couple of fundamental things from time to time if I see something. First one up is going to be Netflix, NFLX. And this stock has gone from 385 in the last 52 weeks all the way down to 252. And now it's at 328. And the big thing people are talking about is competition's going to come into these guys and their cost of content is going to kill them. Those are the two negatives. But Jake's going to tell us what the technicals are really saying at this point.
So here is a long-term chart of Netflix, monthly chart. Depending on the time frame we're looking at, we get different perspectives. Let me explain the indicators on my chart. On the top of the chart, the red line, you've got a 10-period moving average of highs. The bottom line, an 8-period moving average of lows. In the middle, I've got momentum, close 28. On the bottom of the screen, the blue line is Williams accumulation distribution, not to be confused with Williams percent R or standard accumulation distribution. And the red line is a 57. That's 5-7 period moving average of the blue line. So because the work is purely technical, I'm looking at a purely technical formation. And again, over the big picture, it's totally different than what you're going to see over the small picture. Back over here in 2013, we got our first buy signal on the monthly Netflix chart. That would consist of two consecutive price bars above the top of the channel and the blue line above the red line. Since then, and again, realize it's a long-term perspective, there has not been a single solitary long-term sell signal on Netflix. In fact, every time it's come down to the bottom of the channel, which is support, in a buying opportunity. That is totally different than the daily chart, which is right here. The daily chart shows us a different picture entirely. Although it's still bullish, it's moved around a lot more. The last trigger we had on Netflix was right over here as a buy. It remains in buy mode, remains above support. Resistance is now the red line. But the most important thing is, how does the stock compare in terms of divergence? I'm going to put a little line on the chart right over here, which shows the highest price on the chart. That highest price needs to be accompanied by highest momentum on the chart within a matter of 6 days on either side. So the good news is there's no divergence on Netflix. The bad news is it's a little bit high to buy in terms of taking risk, but overall the daily trend remains bullish. And as for an investor, the weekly trend is just turning bullish again, which would be right over here. We see our two complete bars right over here. We see Williams above its moving average right over here on the bottom of the screen. But there's a problem, and the problem is, again, momentum is not sufficiently strong to support this move. So it's an up move, but it's not the best stock you can own right here. That's my technical analysis.
And had a pretty good day today. But many boats were being lifted today on the first day back buying spree that seemed to be going through people's minds. Okay, well, let's turn over to the next one here, which is a company that has not made new highs in a long time and was not looking that great for a while, but it is lately been getting a bid to it, and that's Amazon, AMZN.
Why don't you take it, and then I'll come in after you.
Yeah, well, basically, like I say, it had definitely gotten back on the bicycle. It's above above the 200-day and the 50-day now, which is a nice thing to see. The P.E. ratios are on 83, and I think that's one of the problems with it, because when it was well above 100 and the stock was at 20-50, the company continued to make money, but the valuation was to a point where people didn't want to pay that much for a dollar of earnings. They may still be hesitant to pay 80 or 100 for a dollar of earnings, but that could change. But right now, it's up $44 today, so you can't look a gift horse in the mouth, but I don't know that it's technically out of the woods. Jake's going to tell us that.
Well, we did have a buy trigger, right over here, was the last buying opportunity. When we have a buying opportunity on the channel, the first target is twice the width of the channel, which would be a very small target that was hit immediately after the buy trigger, just a couple of days later. But certainly, this is no stock for the faint of heart. You can just see the volatility here. So what you want to do is you want to slow it down with the weekly chart, which makes it more stable and answers the question. In terms of all of these highs right over here, in other words, here and here and here, and the failure each time, it basically says it hasn't been an easy ride. There are much better stocks in terms of looking for profitable trades. It's a tough stock to trade unless you want to own it very long term, which takes us to the monthly chart, which is a thing of great beauty, but at my age, it doesn't take much to impress me. So on the daily, it's certainly not a trading stock unless you really got a lot of guts and a lot of money to make money with it. Options, yes, but in terms of speculative stocks, not my idea of a good trading stock.
And an expensive one, obviously, at the prices that it's at,
too. Indeed.
This next one up here is one that's owned by everybody and their brother, probably in some way, shape, or form, because it's such a big part of these indexes. And basically, it's a stock that has gone through the roof. And I think it's up almost 100% now since last year, which is an awfully large move for a $1 trillion company. And as I was saying to Jake before, the 200-day moving average is at 218, and we're at 300. So it's getting upwards towards 40 and 50% above its 200-day moving average. So from a technical picture, I'd love to hear what Jake's got to say on what he thinks of Apple right now.
It's an absolutely beautiful chart. It's followed all the rules technically. We own the stock for much lower levels. And every opportunity, and here's what I want people to see. If you're using the channel, every opportunity to the bottom of the channel as support or lower is a buying opportunity. Now, obviously, it's going to change because there is a big problem in Apple that's happening right now. And that is significant bearish divergence. We made a new high in price today. We did not make a new high in momentum. And if we don't make a high in momentum, by which I mean above this high right over here, within the next 5 days, we will have a sell setup, which could be very significant in terms of a move down. And so people will look at this chart and they'll say, oh, breakaway gap. I don't see that. I just don't see it. We own it, like I say, but we're sitting on pins and needles here. Expected 300, saw that today. So now we have to start lightening up a little bit because we don't want to be late to exit the party, because when this stock comes down, it's going to come down big and fast.
And the volume today was pretty big at 29 million shares and change. So
there's a beautiful study in tape reading today. If people want to learn tape reading, if they can go back and play back what the tape looked like today in terms of the ticks, they will learn a lot about how stocks accumulate, how to find accumulation patterns, and so forth. And again, I want to show one more thing, and that would be the weekly chart on Apple, which is right over here. Let me just get rid of some of this stuff over here. Again, you can use this method on the daily or the weekly. The weekly turned bullish right over here, two bars above, Williams above, and you can see on the weekly, we've made a new high in price. We've made a new high in momentum. So on a long-term basis, there's nothing to be concerned about right now. It's just a short-term daily that's problematic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's just had a fantastic run, and particularly in the last 12 months. With regards to, Apple is part of the valuation story. You know, how much are you going to pay for a dollar of earnings? And they re-rated it because of their services business bringing so much equity in. But there are some who think that, you know, that pace of growth in that area is not going to be able to maybe keep the pace that last year saw. So that could be something looking forward as well.
Right. This next one. Could I interrupt for 1 second, Jim?
Sure.
I don't see Tesla on our list anywhere here, is it?
No. How could that be?
No, not today.
I'm just going to do that for a moment.
Yeah. It's an exciting company.
Yeah. The thing that's exciting about this company is the fact that one of the firms, I forget which one it was, raised the price target on Tesla today from $375 to $515. Mm. We've seen things like that happen in the past. And usually those optimistic forecasts turn out to be the death knell. So let's be really careful with Tesla here. Very, very bullish stock, beautiful weekly chart, but certainly not out of the woods again. So let's go back to your list.
Yeah. And one last thing on Tesla, the short interest used to be way up there and is still up there at 15% of the stock, but it used to be much greater. And the 200-day moving average average on it is 263. So a lot of real estate between 430 and 263 right now.
Right. And one of the things I do want to say is small trader sentiment, very important indicator for us. And for the first time in many, many weeks, we've got the small trader bullish at the end of the day today, 90% in the NASDAQ, which is a very significant increase in bullish sentiment, usually preceding the end of a move as opposed to the beginning of a move.
And that short interest I was mentioning is you could extrapolate it out to SPY, the S&P 500, which I saw a chart on Bloomberg showed that the short interest has collapsed in the last 2 to 3 months while the market has gone through the roof, which suggests that obviously some activity here has been short covering.
Of course. And as you said before, we've got to find someone to pass that hot potato to.
Yeah. Well, we've got CVS, which has been doing fairly well here, going this year from a 52-week low of 51 all the way up to 77. So it certainly has had a run, but it's gone sideways here for a little bit in this neighborhood, plus or minus a buck or two off at 75. And I guess the question would be, is this thing going sideways in a cumulative stage or sideways in a distributive stage?
My answer to that depends on the weekly chart, and we can see what's happened on the weekly right over here. It's definitely in an uptrend. Every opportunity to the bottom of the channel has been a buying opportunity. Certainly not moving with the rest of the market right now, but then again, it's not that kind of a market. It's mostly a tech rally right now. So I like CVS as an investment. As a trade, it's been a beautiful swing trade, buying the bottom of the channel, getting out at the top, and so forth.
And probably it's a good demographic thing with the baby boomers having to go get their narcotics and everything else over there. So it's probably not a bad thing from that standpoint either.
Correct.
This next one, the semis, have just been going nuts. The SMH made another new high here today. You just can't get enough of this stuff. And this thing here had a very nice big jump too. This is Advanced Micro Devices, AMD. AMD, another good size jump here today, up over 3 points.
Hold on 1 second. Just let me get my chart going here.
Yeah. That also, I think, made a new 52-week high today. Let's double check on that. Yep, right today, new 52-week high. A year ago at this date, it was $16.94. So from $16.94 on January 3rd of 2019, we've come all the way up to $49 a year later. PE ratio says 253:1. So obviously you can throw that indicator out the window. That doesn't seem like it's meaningful. and the 200-day average is around 31. So you're getting to be $20 above it, which is, again, a huge number. So what does it show technically other than everyone's making a ton of money?
Yeah. So, what I like to do is not just give my opinions, but teach people things. So sure. If you use the moving average channel, you'll notice these patterns that I've highlighted. 5 consecutive bars above the top of the channel, 2 consecutive bars, 5 consecutive bars, 5 consecutive bars. As long as Williams, the blue line, remains above its moving average, every opportunity of 5 consecutive bars above the top of the channel, there's 5 right there, there's another 5 right there, there's another 5 right there, eventually meets its target, which is the range of the 5 bars. So let me make this a little bit bigger here. So if I take my measuring tool and I measure these 5 bars, so let me do this a little bit slowly. I want to make sure everyone gets it, because again, I can give my opinion all day long, but it's not going to teach anybody anything unless I show them exactly what I'm doing.
Right.
So hold on 1 moment, please. I'm going to take this so-called dollar difference tool, drag it from the low to the high during those 5 bars. So just bear with me for a second. Okay, computer, please cooperate with me. It's a little bit delicate. If I go from here to here, the low of the 5 bars to the high of the 5 bars, it gives me my target, which is, roughly speaking, $2.14. So you can see from here, we definitely made our $2.18 target. So that's the way I do the technical part. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so that's giving us a bit of an idea, but do you see anything technically on AMD that would indicate anything other than more upside? Because that's what it's been giving you.
Well, it happened today. And today we've made a new high in price without a new high in momentum. And again, we need to make a new high in momentum within another 5 days. If we don't, there's a problem. We've got a bearish divergence setup. It's not a trigger, but it certainly would be a caution flag. Very, very serious one, in fact. In other words, the market is getting ahead of itself. We need that additional buying to continue to support these prices and prove that it's not just short covering or FOMO fear of missing out.
Right. All right. And again, the semiconductors, I guess we got one right here now. Let's look at NVIDIA, which is one that's had a winding road, not like AMD, which seemed to be going up all the time. This thing went from 127, then it had a drop, and now it's back up. And now it's very close to its all-time high, I'm not sure, but 52-week high.
Yeah. All-time high is right over there.
Yeah, so it's not near the all-time high, but 52-week high, it's pressing into there.
Correct. And again, still not the best stock to participate in this rally, even though the daily chart, in fact, most of the list that we made that you have today, most of the charts will look exactly like this.
Mm-hmm.
Not much else to say. And again, the same situation, new high in price about a week and a half ago, without a new high in moment. momentum problematic. There's a lot of stuff happening that's negative, and we need to get that additional buying pressure in here to support these moves. Otherwise, they're going to collapse.
All right. After here, we are looking at something that went down today, I believe, in such a big up day.
What's
the symbol? It was a laggard for a long time, but it did break above this 160 level, which
What's
was a
symbol?
Big level.
What are we looking at?
IWM. Oh, IWM is your Russell, and there's your small caps, and mostly U.S.-based, and you know, it broke above that 160 level, which got everybody excited, and then today it actually did come back and close up on the day fractionally.
Correct, but again, still problematic in terms of not being able to make a new high, but as I said before, primarily a tech rally today.
Yeah, and so anything else to add technically on this one? Well, basically, you're still seeing that up near new highs without the momentum confirming?
Right, and that momentum indicator, very important. People have underrated it. It's definitely underrated and underused, but really important. Some of the biggest, most important highs and lows in history have been made on momentum divergence.
All right, well, you know, the Fed and rates and yields that you get on fixed income, you know, is a big part of the market. And some people have been saying, if you had the same volatility in stocks as you had in the bond market this last year, people would never stop talking about it. The 10-year went from 3.25 down to 1.25, which is like the stock market going to 4,000, 5,000 on the S&P. So it's a very big percentage move, is
correct,
what I mean. And so the bottom line is this thing, TLT is a proxy for the 20-year treasury. It had that big panic buy-in when it went down to you know, the low yields earlier in 2019. And then it's been basically sneaking with higher yields since then. Now it's at a kind of a cross in a row, I think, at this 135 number, which if it breaks under 135, I think would be significant for higher yields, but it doesn't seem to be doing that. So what are you seeing here on the 20-year treasury proxy? Higher rates, lower rates, or hard to tell?
It's a little bit hard to tell right now. I won't place a bet on that, but right now, it's really not the kind of a stock that I'd be willing to trade. There's so many better opportunities. Mm-hmm. If you want to do some long-term planning, use it as an indicator, but in terms of trading stocks, not my favorite.
Yeah, this would be more for somebody to watch who has a fixed income portfolio, and they'd want to know if they should take on duration.
Exactly.
Or should they keep it in a short-term situation where they'd have the flexibility to switch?
Correct.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we want to remember, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jim.
I just want to say, and unfortunately, at 137, it's hard to make that call.
True, true. And one of the things we want to remember about all the stocks we look at today or otherwise, many of these rallies have been fueled by two things. Number one, low interest rates. Number two, the low cost of a lot of raw commodities. The ability of many of these companies, like Starbucks, to buy cheap inputs, cheap milk, cheap coffee prices, low cocoa prices, low sugar prices, and then sell it at the retail level and not reflect that discount is what's contributing to many of these big profits that we're seeing. And it's important to remember that because a lot of these commodities, copper, silver, gold, coffee, cocoa, sugar, have bottomed and are beginning to move higher, which will definitely cut into corporate profits 6-9 months down the road.
And the jump in the Fed balance sheet that is just ridiculously aggressive because of this repo settlement they were worried about is supposed to be normalized after Q1. So they added a huge amount of reserves in the last quarter of the year, which obviously helps stocks. And if they are to normalize or withdraw some of that stimulus or liquidity after Q1, that could also have an effect on the stocks as well.
True. Let me show you guys something. This is coffee futures. Coffee futures from back in October, back here, to where we are about 2 weeks ago, have moved up from about 93 cents a pound to $1.30 a pound. Percentage-wise, that is one huge move. And again, it takes a while for this kind of increase to be reflected in underlying profits, but that's going to be a big game changer down the road.
So basically, in layman's term, low interest rates, which may or may not continue, or if they were taken away from you a bit, and or inflation, ergo the cost of goods going up,
yep,
are not factored into stock prices at all. And that could be where the vulnerability would be in Q2, 3, and 4.
Absolutely. And let me show you one more thing a little bit off the subject. But one of the most important indicators I look at is called the Commitment of Traders Report, which comes out of the USDA and shows us what percentage of ownership in commodities is being held by large traders, small traders, and small speculators. So let me show you this. I'm going to bring up a chart here. Bear with me for a moment. And let me bring it up on the screen. So here's a chart. I'm going to put some copper on here. Here in green, we have commercial buying activity. In other words, when the chart turns green, it means that commercials, the end users, manufacturers, are buying copper. I want you to look at their track record. Buying here at the low, buying here at the low. And again, right now, the largest buying in history by commercial traders in copper. They are very rarely wrong. In fact, ultimately, they will always be right. So when you look at this and you say, what's my next best trade? What's my next good investment? You want to go with the commercials. They're buying copper. They're not buying it for their health. They're buying it because they think it's going to go up. So when you look at stocks like Southern Peru Copper, SCCO, BHP, BH Billiton, COPX, most of these are paying some great dividends and are just at the beginning of their moves. They have not moved with these rallies, but that's where the next big moves are going to be. And let me show you one more, and that is, what were commercials doing before this big move up in coffee? I'll show you right here. This was the commercial buying activity. This is the entire history of coffee in terms of commercial activity. Right over here, about 3 or 4 months before the bottom, commercials, Starbucks, Nestle, and so forth, bought more coffee than ever. So while this is not a short-term indicator, it's very significant. In fact, let me show you one more and then I'll shut up. Check this out. We've had a big up move in gold. I'm going to put a chart on here. Right over here, you can barely see it, is the first time that commercials went long, net long gold in about 15 years. Very significant. So now we can get back to what we were doing before.
The copper one that I always gravitate to, and full disclosure, I own some, is FCX. What were the other symbols you were talking about?
COPX. In fact, let me put some charts on here. Let's look at FCX, which I happen to like very much. It's a wonderful little stock, not too expensive. And here's the chart, FCX daily chart. Come on, computer. You can see what's happened. It's been a beautiful trade from 850 all the way to where it is now, even making a new high today. Talked about Southern Peru Coppers, SCCO, right over here, BHP, BH Billiton, Rio Tinto, and the copper ETF, COPX. Here's copper ETF. But here's the thing that's interesting. If I put Southern Peru Copper on the screen, check this out. Just bear with me for a moment. Southern Peru Copper is paying a dividend of 4.8%. Not too long ago, it was 7%. There's some political risk in owning copper in Peru, but the bottom line is, not only are these relatively safe investments in terms of what commercials are doing, because you're on the right side of the big picture, but you'll also get some dividends for holding that stock.
Why did the dividend go from 7 to 4.80? Is it because they cut it, or is it because the price of the stock went up?
Because of the price of the stock went up, so it's a dividend yield.
Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't know if they had cut it or not.
No.
Yeah. You'll see a lot of these dividend aristocrats that obviously raise their dividend for 50 years in a row, and the dividend will only be 1.3%. Well, the reason it's 1.3% is the stock went through the roof during that period as well.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get back to the script here.
sorry about that.
CRM, which is Salesforce. And Salesforce was Ed Hyman's big call a year ago, and it was not a bad one. And I saw him on TV talking about FIS this year, which we could get into after we look at SRM.
So let's look at CRM first. Hang on 1 second.
I mean, CRM, yeah.
Wonderful stock to invest in, but difficult to trade. Do I have the right one? No, wrong one. Hold on 1 second. There's CRM. Not my idea of a great trading stock because it's not trending, but hey, as an investment,
it's a momentum deal.
You can see that. So it's really difficult for me to trade, but in terms of where it is right now, still in a bull trend, but again, that same pattern we're seeing across the board. New high in price without a new high in momentum. Mm-hmm. So momentum's got to catch up to the market. Otherwise, we have some problems.
Yeah. Take a look at that FIS because that's what he was mentioning this time. He's the guy who works for Evercore and he's generally respected as one of the better research people or whatever.
Fidelity National, is that it?
Yep. It's a, I think it's a payment company.
Looks like it. Fidelity National Info, right? Nice chart, trending higher. But again, that same problem we're seeing across the board. New high in price without a new high in momentum. Red flag warning.
Yeah. You got good looking companies who've been doing very, very well, but maybe jumping on the boat at this particular juncture may not be the best time to do that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we got NASDAQ also making a new highs, all-time highs again today.
There's the Qs.
So the Qs should be doing pretty good, and they did. They actually closed on their all-time high, it looks like, according to my screen.
They sure did, and here's the monthly chart, and here's the quarterly chart for the really, really big picture. So there's no question about it. They've more than made up for everything they lost many years ago. It's been a beautiful trending market. On a daily chart, again, that same problem keeps showing up. New high in price without a new high in momentum, and believe me, down the road, next few days are going to be very important in terms of what we can expect. product from this market. If we don't get that momentum moving, it's going to be problematic.
You know, the decade brought in $17 trillion in increased values of stocks. And this is an index. I mean, the NASDAQ, didn't it top at like 5,000 when we had the dot-com bubble?
Let's go back and take a look.
And aren't we now almost twice the level of the bubble?
Yeah, you know, I don't have the exact number, but I think you're right.
Yeah, well, it just puts things in perspective that if you print enough money, everything goes up.
until it catches you.
I mean, that's what it is, liquidity. I mean, I would think everybody would have to admit that if the Fed does not do this $400 billion increase in their balance sheet in the last 6 months, there's no way we may make this kind of breakout.
Well, look, the bottom line is
there's no earnings and revenues backing it.
Sure. You know, if you're a money manager and you're hired to manage someone's money and make some income for them, where can you go to get that income?
Yeah.
And it's very tough to do that in the interest rate market unless you're going specifically with stocks. So the money is essentially being forced into the stock market, yeah, which is not a good scenario longer term.
I call the Fed policy tear gassing the money market.
That's right.
they shoot tear gas into the money market fund and everybody has to scramble out of it because they have to get a certain return to live on.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we see the again, another big up move. And the caveat is again, the momentum of that. Let's go to GLD, which you were talking about, might as well just talk about the one they've got here.
Yep, GLD. So we're looking at gold, right?
Uh-huh. And GLD 143.95, very close to its 52-week high, and had a pretty good run, obviously, last year.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And the question is does it have the legs to blow off this year, or is it going to...
So what I've got is here's a gold chart, big picture on GLD going all the way back to the all-time high, and we are in what I call spike resistance. If we take the highest bar, and we take the low of the highest bar, that usually serves as resistance, and we've come right back to it in the last couple of months. So what's going to happen? If we have a monthly close above the low of that high bar, we're going to make new all-time highs, which I think is definitely coming. It's just a question of keeping your wits about it. Gold is the kind of market now I'd like to own, but not trade.
So not get shaken out like when we went from 1580 down to 1450, but use the drops as anyone would if they think they're in a bull market, use the drops to accumulate.
Yep, it's an investment, not a trade right now.
Right.
I mean, it's fun to trade gold, but it's not the best trading market there is. I see they're settling Apple at 300.75, looks like to me.
Mm-hmm. Since we have a gold up there, how about putting up silver just to, for the people who are interested in that?
Silver.
SIL or whatever else you want to call
there's it. There's a silver ETF right over there, and that is the weekly chart. Here's the big picture quarterly chart. Well, let's go to the monthly chart. Big picture monthly chart. So we are still in the very early stages of this move, and I think that dollar for dollar, you get much more bang for the buck with silver than you do with gold.
It doesn't seem to have the extension that the gold does. Yeah.
No, not even close.
You had been following platinum gold relationship. How's that standing currently?
Gold right now is trading at 1531. Platinum, which was trading at a $1,500 premium over gold, is now trading at a $600 discount to gold. So again, platinum, much better buy for the longer term, certainly cheaper and eventually going to go much higher. The big move, of course, has been in palladium, which very few people are willing to trade because it makes such big moves.
Okay, the next one we're going to jump over to, symbol is O, and it's a REIT. And I did notice two things today. The REITs and the utilities were getting thrown out as a risk-off strategy. Obviously, people are not as worried, so they're throwing out the ones that were where people are hiding during turbulence, which was the REITs and the utilities. They're going out the window a bit, and this is a REIT. So what are you thinking here on O?
Clearly in a downtrend. The first one we looked at today that is actually in a downtrend, but ultimately a great buy at support. So where do we find support? We go to the quarterly chart, like so. Quarterly chart, a thing of great beauty. I would be a buyer all the way down here at about $62 a share, which is the bottom of the channel. In terms of the big picture, still a big bull market, but on the daily, not something you want to own right now. Certainly worth selling. In fact, you'll notice today opened above the top of the channel, sold off and went all the way down to the bottom of the channel, which is exactly the way stocks act in bear trends using my indicators.
All right, everyone's banging the drum here as we go into the new year, as they've done every year, it seems like. That emerging markets are where you're going to be able to get some growth because the value there is better than our value. And when and if the dollar rolls over, these things are going to scream.
Yeah, so, what symbol do we want?
This is going to be EWZ.
EWZ. Okay, here you go.
So from the South American emerging markets, we're talking Brazil here. They got a new president down there, kind of buddy of Trump, pro-business, I guess. And He's working on the pensions down there and stuff like that. And yeah, the thing's gone from 40 up to, 36 up to 48. And it made a 52-week high today. So what do you see?
I always distinguish between a stock I'd like to own and a stock I'd like to trade. I like to trade stocks that have defined uptrends or downtrends. This is not one of those stocks. As a stock I'd like to own, absolutely. I think it's definitely worthwhile. And if I'm going to own a stock, I always want to know, is there a dividend? So bring up the dividend yield, which is, again, 2.3% here. Not bad compared to what you can get in the bank. So as a stock I'd like to own for the longer term, I'd be a buyer at the bottom of the channel. But as a stock I'd like to trade, not my cup of tea.
And if you were a believer in the emerging market story, this might be part of that story.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you look at the stock, again, the bigger picture, it's just getting started. This is the monthly chart. So
There's two other symbols, since we're talking about Brazil. Let's just talk about two other symbols in this kind of genre. And one would be FEZ, which is Europe. And what's Europe looking like technically?
Here we go. Euro stocks, again, on the big picture monthly, on the daily. Very similar to the S&P and the Qs. But again, that same problem. And I want you to see, I want people to see how pervasive that problem is. Momentum needs to accompany price. Momentum tends to lead price. So if momentum is heading lower and not keeping pace with price, it's problematic. And you can look at practically any stock and you see the same pattern across the board. And that, to me, is a big red flag.
Can you pull the lens out to a five-year period?
We can go to a five-year, sure.
I just wanted to highlight something and see if you see anything going on, because we had a very similar run in 2017 in Europe. And by 2018, it had stopped.
There's
your
five-year chart, 2015 to 2020.
Yeah, so this actually doesn't have to be, two or three years would be fine, because I'm just looking at the rally in 2016 and 17 that took us all the way through 17. And then by 18, the thing, obviously it was the beginning of the year, similar to where we are now, as far as date. And everyone jumped into Europe and emerging markets and everything. And then the aftermath wasn't as positive as people expected. I'm just wondering if there's any similarity there that could come and bite people in the rear if they get really optimistic in January and February and find out it doesn't work out that way.
Well, we can do this. Let me show you something. Let's go to the Euro stocks right over here, futures. So just let me bring that up. One moment, please.
Yeah, and as we're talking, emerging markets, EEM is another symbol. And it, again, during that time frame of 2017, had a big run up. And in January, it had a big buy-in. And then by the second quarter, it had gone into the fade mode. So all those people that bought into that big optimism didn't get paid.
Right, and here we can see that if we zoom out on the chart, you can see that basically since October, November, we've gone nowhere. Mm-hmm. Great, great trading market if you want to treat it that way. But as an investment, not something I'd be in right now.
Yeah, it's very popular. Very popular, shall we say, advertised, or shall we say, consensus that emerging markets are supposed to be.
You hear it all the time on CNBC, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the banks, because they've been going very, very well. And believe me, I don't know if there's one analyst who's not bullish the banks. This one is Bank of America, which has had a great run. Mm-hmm. And I was impressed when the CEO was on there and discussed how their loan portfolio, the people have to have pretty good scores to get loans from them. So they feel like they're doing a pretty good job managing their risk on that. And today it was up again, and it certainly has had a good run this year. So Bank of America looking any good, or what do you think?
How could a bank not make money?
Right.
I mean,
they pay us nothing and they charge us a lot, right?
Exactly. So, in fact, I'm kind of surprised they're not doing better. So Bank of America is certainly not one of the better stocks in terms of the banking sector, but absolutely, definitely a good sector to be in as long as interest rates remain low so they can charge money and juice us as best they can.
Yeah, a lot of people like Citigroup because their P ratio is like 10 versus 13, and their price to book is much more reasonable than JP Morgan's.
Yeah, here's Citi. So,
yeah, that's why a lot of people like Citi in lieu of that. And maybe some of the regionals, that are out there as well.
One thing that we have to be very careful of is this. Here is the long-term chart on Citi. And you can see, let's go back to monthly chart. We were right back just slightly above the all-time highs, which were right over here back in 2018. And again, I'm going to say the same thing, sound like a broken record. If we don't start moving on momentum, it's going to be problematic. Because momentum must exceed its previous high level right over here very soon. Otherwise, we're going to see a lot of profit taking, and it's going to be Katie bar the door. And remember, January seasonally starts out strong, but does not continue that way. So be careful.
How about two other quick ones in the financials? One is Wells Fargo, WFC, over in your neighborhood.
Yep, here we go. Wells Fargo. And again, it's gone absolutely nowhere. Definitely not encouraging. And which one else did you want to look at?
Goldman Sachs, GS.
GS, right here. Not bad, but again, the same problem. New high in price without a new high in momentum. So this looks very much today like a short covering rally and the final cave-in within the next few days, unless momentum gets moving.
And finally, the last stock we've got on the list is going to be Intel, INTC. Again, another semi-deal. So obviously it was trying to go up here today, almost a buck, and it's had a big run.
And here's Intel. Again, not the easiest stock to trade, but definitely had a big run. And again, that same old problem shows on the chart. New high in price without a new high momentum. So again, I advise caution. In one of our big accounts, we went to pretty much all cash and rebalanced in the last couple of days. So we'll see how that goes for us.
Yeah, and a general idea right now is that between now and the end of next week, if the momentum can pick up to, the indicator can pick up to the price, then you're in a better shape technically. The fact that short interest has collapsed during this advance and the prices are extended as they are is another risk factor that you could run out of buyers up here.
Correct.
Yeah. And then you say seasonally, you know, one thing obviously you're not right every single time. Nobody is, but your feeling around mid-October is that you wouldn't want to stand in front of this market for the next 2, 3, 4 months. And obviously, anybody who stood in front of it has the wounds to show for it.
For sure.
So obviously, you know, an acceleration to the upside was pretty much your idea, and it was fairly accurate there. So obviously, very accurate. But now you are a little bit more cautious, and you would say the next 2 to 4 weeks are certainly, you know, you're going to be monitoring whether these things can sustain. Huh?
For the last 6 months, I've been saying to people, look, if you're not making money in this market, there's a problem. This has been one of the easiest markets in which to make money that I can recall in many, many years. It ain't going to be that easy anymore. And so the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks are going to separate the professionals from the late Johnny-come-latelys. It's not going to be that easy anymore. One of the things we want to look at is market sentiment. So let me show that for a second. You know, I don't have a sentiment chart with me. It's too bad. If you had a sentiment chart, you'd see that the small trader is now, as of today, 90% bullish in the survey that we do. That has not happened in a long time and tends to be a leading indicator, usually by a week or two, of significant declines in price. So again, I'm saying, please, everybody, be careful. If you've got some profits, bank some of them, put in some stops. It's not time to be really bullish. The time to be really bullish is over. Now the time to be cautious has arrived.
And there's also option strategies that are defensive in nature, like married puts, collars, even, you know, many different ones you could look at to try to bracket your equity up here so that you do walk away decently. Is there a chart formation? You know, would it be a daily high surrounded by lower highs? Would it be a weekly high surrounded by lower weekly highs that might give you, you know, pause that the timing of a rollover might be occurring?
It would be a momentum divergence trigger. Let me show you what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Let's take what we've got on the chart here. Intel. I'm going to put a vertical line on Intel. If my hand doesn't fail me here. Here we go. Just a second. So this would be what I call my A and B points. New high in price without a new high in momentum. I go back and I find my highest momentum previous to that right over here. So this would be my 4 points. I then find the lowest momentum between the two, which would be right over here. Closing below that momentum low would be my chart formation that I'm looking for as a significant sell trigger. And you can see that's not too far away.
So you'd rather see some weakness.
I'd rather sell on weakness, yes.
Sell on weakness and then join the selling, then be the first guy at the party.
Correct. Yeah. And let me show you something strange.
This is a party with a lot of participants. And
if
they call off the party, it's going to be difficult for everybody to get out that door.
For sure. Yeah. So let me show you something else that might be a little bit off base. And how much time do we have left?
Oh, we got 10.
Okay. So look, one of the markets that I have not traded in probably 20 years is orange juice futures.
Yeah, I was going to go around the horn with you on this. You want to start out with OJ?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
In fact, let me show you this. Very interesting.
Because I looked at it as well. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Here, let me show you something very cool. Here we go. Let me get my chart up on the screen because I want to know what commercials are doing. So I'm going to go to JO057 continuous OJ chart. Let me explain what I've got. Here you go. Monthly chart. So these are the cyclical components in orange juice. Not perfect, but it does tend to pick lows pretty nicely. And on the bottom of the chart here, I've got commercial buying activity. So let me zoom out and show you something. If you take a look at the green part, you will see that since the start of the COT, Commitment of Traders report, with maybe one exception, commercials have always been long orange juice futures before the big moves. So for example here, let me just zoom in on this. Before this big move, in one of the biggest moves in history, commercials started buying about a year ahead of time. They were buyers at this low right over here. They were buyers at this low right over here. And now, for the last year, they've been buying more OJ than than ever. So the question is, are they buying it because they love vitamin C? Or are they buying it because they know something? Bottom line is this, they've got the best weather forecasters in the business. They know way ahead of time when there's going to be a weather market. We can't do what they do because they dollar cost average all the way down. But this is going to be one of my picks for a big move sometime this year. All we have to do is wait for the weather to trigger a buy, and we're going to move up like crazy. So let's see what happens. The last time this happened was right over here in conjunction with the cyclical low. So I'm looking for a combination. Cyclical low, commercials buying, and small trader index, very negative. So it's a combination of three things I look at, and that's the OJ story right now. And the problem is, how can you trade OJ if you're not a futures trader? The answer is real simple. Go to the company that owns more OJ futures than anybody else, and believe it or not, that's Coca-Cola, and that would be Minute Maid Orange Juice. So they're buying their inventory right now. Their cost is going to be low, so when OJ goes crazy, they're going to make a whole bunch of money. So I would go to the stock OJ. I would go to Coca-Cola as the next trade and take the next buy trigger on Coke.
Yeah, I was noticing the moving averages on OJ is 50 days around 96, 200 days around 101. It's trading around 101. And it looked like there might be some resistance at 105 and 115. So you keep an eye on those numbers and see how they start materializing one way or the other.
One more thing. Let me bring up the OJ chart, futures chart. Just one moment, please. Here we go. JO2, which is the OJ chart. And put it on the screen. One moment, please. Hold on, please.
It seems to me like you're as keen on this OJ now as you were keen on bean oil 6 months ago or a year ago.
You got that right. So here's the OJ chart, and we've got the exact opposite situation, by which I mean we continue to make new lows, but momentum has started moving higher. So that's the one. Keep your eye on it.
And it's always nicer to get into something if it is going to materialize near the lower end, because once the thing starts spiking up, then it's kind of like a horse that's out of the corral. It's kind of hard to get on.
Especially in a market like OJ, which is very thinly traded. And here's the bean oil that we were talking about, you just mentioned a few months ago. What else do we have today, Jim?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, was there anything else that you saw? Like the cocoa had a big rally to 2,700, pulled back to 2,400. Now it's back up off of 2,400. Is there an opportunity there in your view, technically?
There is, but there's a better opportunity in sugar.
Okay, let's take a look.
So sugar, we've got, let me show you. Here's the sugar market. And the weekly chart is just beginning to move right over here. And there's a sugar ETF called Cane, not very actively traded, but it does tend to move with sugar. And it's pretty cheap. So it's just getting started. And here's that opposite situation. In other words, momentum making new lows. I'm sorry, price making new lows right over here. So let me move over to that. But momentum not making a new low below this low right over here. So that's the one to look at. And again, cane, very thinly traded, but definitely worth looking at.
And the moving averages on sugar, 50 days around 1260, 200 day around 1230. So the market is trading above both and they are inverted to the upside, which, it's not terrible.
Correct.
Yeah. Close out, if we could, by something that I think is going to be a big story this year, one way or the other, and that's the dollar index, DXY.
Here's the dollar index. Well, here, let's look at it this way. Dollar index is best traded with UUP for the dollar index going up, or UUDN for the dollar index going down. So there's two charts, and here's a great big divergence on the chart. UDN. In other words, buying UDN would be a bet that the dollar is going to go down, because when the dollar goes down, UDN as an inverse ETF goes up. We've got that exact opposite situation. New low in price. And look what's been happening. While we've been going lower and lower and lower, momentum continues to go higher and higher and higher. So I think it's going to be a big story on the upside for UDN, which would mean downside for US dollar.
Yeah, I think that is a theme that some people are mentioning, that if it were to occur, may enhance the commodity sector. And just a sidebar is that I noticed that on Bloomberg, they're talking about their Bloomberg Commodity Index quite a bit. And at Vanguard, last year, they introduced a fund where it is commodity based. And so I don't know if these guys have done research and have a belief that there's value in that sector as a diversification for people's portfolio. But you would imagine they may have. And that's why keeping an eye on it might not be a terrible idea.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to come to the top of the hour now. Is there anything else that we didn't cover market wise, Jake? Or do you think that we've gone around there pretty good?
I think we pretty much exhausted all the possibilities. But the key takeaway from this, from my point of view, is watch that relationship between momentum and price. Things look really great now, but if momentum doesn't start to play catch up, it's going to be problematic down the road very soon, in fact.
And order imbalances is how you get these type of dramatic moves. Obviously, the amount of people covering shorts and playing, I don't want to miss out trades, outweighs the people willing to sell. And that's how you get this kind of an up move. Conversely,
indeed,
if people want out and there's nobody there to place a bid, they could drop the bid pretty fast if they see an avalanche of selling volume coming in.
Yeah, and the key to this, besides momentum, is going to be follow through. Do we get follow through next week or tomorrow with these moves that we saw today? If there's no follow through, it's going to be very significant for me as a market technician.
Yeah, and some people are thinking that the traders who have made big hits on the long side may be willing to take a shot at the downside here at some point this month or next month.
For sure, absolutely.
All right, well, at closing up, again, Jake, just reintroduce yourself, if you would, for people who are just joining or are new to us, and also let them know if there's any special offers or definitely how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, I've got my year-end sale going on where you discounted some items to 80% discount at my website, jakebernstein.com. A lot of good stuff there, a lot of webinars, a lot of technical studies. Newsletter, if someone wants a free sample, just write me, jake@trade-futures.com. I'll be glad to send them a free copy of my newsletter, which is a video newsletter every week.
Fantastic. And I'm Jim Kenny. For those who would like to get an update on my weekly update, just go to optionprofessor@gmail.com, and I'm more than happy to put you on the list and shoot that out to you once a week. Okay, I'm going to now turn it over. Thanks a lot, Jake, for being here. I think we covered an awful lot for people, and believe me, if this momentum does fade and the prices start rolling over, they'll be darn glad that they at least listened in and were somewhat aware that there could be some clouds coming into a very sunny picture right now.
And so, the price was right.
Yep. So hopefully you'll be back throughout the year to give us updates, from time to time. That would be fabulous.
Jim, pleasure to listen to you and talk with you.
Okay, great. And David, I'm going to shoot it back to you. And again, Happy New Year, everybody. We'll be talking to you throughout the year.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great first show of the year. So just a quicker reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast network to get instant updates on new episodes of shows. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the archive of this show as soon as I can get it posted, and any of the past shows. Just want to thank next week we'll be back to the normal schedule, Crowd Forecast News on Monday, and the show Analyze Your Trade on Tuesday. And then we'll also be having another multi-speaker event, the ones that I host with Anka Metcalf. That'll be on January 11th. So be sure to watch for information about that. And just want to thank my guests again for today, Jake Bernstein of jakebernstein.com and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks everyone.
David. Thanks for doing this, David. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks. Bye.